The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning and welcome to the seventh of the Seven Factor series. This morning as I was walking in with Mitra, she was saying, "It's graduation day. We're finishing the series. I love that. I absolutely love that." Yeah, it's a sense of yes. For those of you who've been coming, or even if this is your first one or your last one, or you're coming to all of them, whatever it is, it's just like, wow, it's the culmination. It's the crown jewel of the seven factors today, practicing with equanimity. And yeah, a lot to say about the seventh factor, equanimity. And what I like to do is to start by just doing a guided meditation for us to arrive and settle. There's something about actually being at IMC. When I come here, my nervous system just relaxes. No meditation necessary. But meditation can also help, right? Especially if you've had a hectic morning for whatever reason. It's nice to arrive. You're here. It's all good. So, I'd like to invite you to find how you can sit comfortably. If you need to get up and get more props, this is a perfect time to do that. More cushions, back support, knee support, whatever you need. I'm just settling in. Relaxing, softening the body, letting go. I'd like to take a few minutes this morning just to support us to arrive by doing a brief body scan to invite our body to relax, to let go of tension, and to really be felt from the inside. I'm going to ask you to start today with your right hand, actually. Starting with your right thumb. Letting your right thumb be felt from the inside as much as possible. Not from the control tower of the head, feeling the hand, but the thumb. But from the inside, as if the organ of sensation, sensing, feeling was inside it, from the inside. And if it feels too complicated, don't worry about it. Let it be a koan for your mind to just settle into, not fight with. Relaxing, softening, letting go. Then feeling, sensing the four fingers. The air around them, or if they're touching something. Softening, relaxing. Deeply letting go. Feeling the palm of the hand, the back of the hand. Letting go. The wrist. Relaxing, softening. the arm, the elbow. Ah, relaxing the elbow. And the arm, the weight of the arm. Moving up the upper arm, the shoulder. Letting go. Moving to the left side, the thumb. Feeling it from the inside. Softening, relaxing the thumb and the four fingers. Feeling. Feeling the air, the warmth or the coolness of the air, or if it's touching your lap, the fingers. Ah, letting go. Offering up, moving up to the palm of the hand, the back of the hand. Feeling the sensations, what the hand might be touching from the inside, letting it light up the point of contact, if any. And softening, letting go. Moving up to your wrist. No need to hold any tension. And moving further up to your arm and to elbow. Upper arm and shoulder. Letting gravity pull down and support. Feeling as if your two arms are branches of a tree, completely relaxed, no need to hold them up, completely relaxed, offering up their weight to gravity. And feeling your toes, your right toe, your foot. Feeling from the inside, relaxing, letting go. Moving up. Your ankles, lower legs, knees, or the right knee rather, upper leg. Letting the areas be felt from the inside, then unwrapping. Unwinding, letting go, opening up any tension. The left side, the toes. feeling the sensations of the feet from the inside. Softening, letting go. The lower leg, the ankles, the lower legs. Feeling from the inside, the knees, the upper legs. Ah, feeling your legs, both legs, from the toes up to the sit bones. Completely relaxed, no need to hold up. Offering up any tension or tightness to gravity. Feeling as if the legs are now two other branches of this tree resting. Feeling your shoulders, your neck, relaxing, softening. If there's any tension, letting go. Area of your chest. Feeling any sensations of breathing moving through the upper back. Moving down to your abdomen. Softening, letting go. Deeply letting go. And the back, lower back, your sit bones, the groin area softening. Letting go of any tension, any holding, any contraction in your belly, your sit bones. Letting your entire trunk, the trunk of your body, to offer up any tension to gravity. Completely open. Moving to our head, the face, up from the neck, relaxing your jaw, perhaps even letting your mouth fall open a bit. Relaxing the muscles of the face. Feeling the eyes. If there's any tension around them, letting the eyes rest in their socket. And letting your forehead, feeling your forehead, softening, relaxing, if any tension, any contraction between your brow. Letting go of the muscles, feeling the muscles of your face from the inside. The back of your face, inside of your face, the muscles. And deeply letting go, softening. As if your brain was a thinking muscle, imagining, softening that too. Softening, relaxing the grip of your thoughts, your thinking. Just relaxing. Easing. Again, let it be a koan to make sense in its own terms, not to be figured out. Feeling your entire body. Soft and relaxed. Completely open. Resting. Letting the breath move on its own. No effort needed. The breath breathes itself. Appreciating, enjoying a moment of deep rest, deep letting go. Complete in itself, being here in this moment. Deep moment of settling, arriving, being here, embodied. same way that a rock can tether lots of balloons. Imagine balloons of thought being tethered and steadied. By the steadiness of mindfulness of the body, feeling the body stable. Relaxed, steady. Mindfulness of the body, kaya, gata, sati, and Pali. Stability in the body. Relaxing, feeling, sensing the body can serve as a foundation. Stabilizing foundation for the practice of equanimity. So in preparation, we will hang out here together. The body relaxed. Soft. Sensed and felt from the inside. Tethering thoughts, worries and concerns. Just breathing. Just sitting and sensing from the inside for a few minutes. What does stability mean to you? Explore in your own body and mind. Can there be stability? Together with whatever's going in, going on inside, in your mind or outside, sounds and noises, whatever there might be. Can there be stability and spaciousness with it all, unmoved? Sitting like a mountain. I'm wondering if you have any observations from the guided meditation and the invitation to explore stability in the body with mindfulness of the body, relaxing, stabilizing the body, and equanimity, which we'll be talking about a lot. But if you have any insights as to what came up for you with this exploration so far this morning, the guided meditation, please, the mics are available. Make sure it's on.
It's on. It was good quality meditation for me, and I think one thing I note is that perceptions other than my breath more typically have kind of a bit of a irritability to it, like a distraction. And I was felt like I was in a place where there wasn't any kind of a kind of emotional reaction attached to any of the perceptions.
Nice.
And I kind of look forward to each breath. You know, felt you know, just kind of the stillness, like the mountain metaphor, felt right to me. So, that was my experience.
Lovely. Thank you for sharing that. I so appreciate you sharing it. And what you said for me is really pure gold in the way of linking what we did to the practice of equanimity. Because one thing that you said, and it's really subtle, and I want to highlight it for everyone, is like, oh, there was not this irritability. Like, it was just kind of like, there wasn't irritability. It was just kind of this, my word, stability, or the sense of sitting like a mountain, or in fact looking forward to the next thing. So that's what I would say. That's the feeling of equanimity, is there isn't this. It's like, yeah, it's there. Sensations are there, or whatever else is there. It's not, you neither get pulled into it nor push it back. Like, oh yeah, just kind of the sense of stability. So I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you. Any other reflections, questions, reflections about what this was like for you? Please. And hold it close.
I'm wondering if you could turn up your sound just a little tiny bit.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. And also to say there are hearing assisted devices, because sometimes no matter... Oh, you are. Right.
I still can't really hear everything you're saying.
Yeah. I think turning it up might be a good idea. Is it? It's pretty soft. It's all good. We'll turn it up a little bit. So the first one, yes. Yes. Push it up just a little bit. And I'll keep talking. Make sure it doesn't get too echoey. I think that's, how's that? Is that okay? Can you hear better? Okay, great. So you probably missed much of the first meditation. Oh, well, it's all recorded. Sorry. Okay. Most of it, but not all. It's a little bit of... It's kind of an effort. It's effortful to hear every single word. Thank you for raising that point. Yeah, for the sake of everyone. It was So any other reflections before I move on and talk about equanimity? Anything else? Volume, anything else? Blissful? You want to take the mic, or that's just one word, blissful? Yeah. Yeah, I like that word, blissful. Yeah. Any other reflections about the meditation this morning? Anything different about it for you? Anything the same? So one thing just to share with you is that I was I often offer a settling of the body and a brief guided body scan, and this one was a little more. I started differently than I usually do. Those who've listened to many of my guided meditations, and there is something about when you take actually longer time and more attention, more care with sensing the body and really letting go, relaxing the body from the inside. There's kind of a more blissful, open quality that can be in like the mind really settling and resting more. And it just I cannot emphasize it enough, the practice of mindfulness of the body, kaya gata sati, being mindfulness of the body, relaxing the body, settling in the body. It can really serve as this tether. Again, the same way that when you have these helium balloons and you have a heavy rocks tethering, you can think of your thoughts, your worries, and the body, just the stability of the body and the sensing the body, really stabilizing thoughts and emotions. So this hopefully gave a taste of that, a pointer to that. Yeah, sure.
Just make a quick comment, because I do listen to sometimes a recording you've done for a body scan,
yeah,
which I actually did this morning, which I attribute to why I had a particularly good session now. But I would just say that I really liked starting with the hand and the thumb.
Yeah.
I feel like it's easier for me to get inside the sensations of my fingers and my hand than it is my feet.
Right.
So I kind of just let you know that. I think that's that kind of worked.
Yeah, great. Thank you. I'm realizing that too. I think the feet to head or head to feet is kind of like just this systemic, but it's not. Starting from the hands is really where there are most sensations, because hands, we have so many more what are they called?
Nerves.
Yeah, nerves of feeling. It's just that's really the perfect place to start, even though it's kind of in the middle of the body. Yeah, thank you for that. So, okay. All right. Now that we're all relaxed and stable and arrived, I'm making lots of assumptions. Let's talk about equanimity. Yay! We've arrived at the seventh factor. Also known as the crown jewel of Buddhist practice, equanimity. It shows up on a lot of different lists, equanimity. So one way to think of equanimity in relationship to the other factors is that it's the culmination of all the other ones. You know, every week we've talked about how one leads to another, how mindfulness, the first one being sati, mindfulness, when you're aware, it leads to the next one, which is, remember? Investigation, exactly. It leads to Dhamma Vichaya, investigation, curiosity, which then leads to joy. Yeah, it leads to joy, piti. Kind of like the sense of joy. And then when you have... actually, no, wait. I'm So that was, you got that right. You messed me up, man. Like, wait a minute. There's some discordance in my mind. It doesn't. I'm trying to make it make sense, but it's not.
Energy.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Energy, virya, engagement. Right. So this is good. Yeah, keeping me on my toes. So when there is sati, and so when there is mindfulness. And then there is mindfulness when you're aware, when there is awareness, a sense of curiosity arises. And then when there is this sense of curiosity, you become more and more engaged. So virya, engagement, effort, is the third factor. And then when the three of them are kind of together, it gives rise to the fourth one, which is piti, joy, a sense of delight, of engagement. And again, what we're describing, you could see in your daily life when you're doing something that you love doing. May it be gardening, doing crafts, whatever it might be, or on meditation on the cushion when you're really engaged and you're observing and aware. All of these can arise. So piti, joy, delight, being the fourth one. So okay, so then. All of this leads to the fifth one, to the fifth factor being, remember what the fifth one is? No, that's, was that? Close? No? Okay, so let me give you some clues. When there is a sense of pity and joy and delight, when that kind of like, nourishes your heart and your body, the body can get into a sense of tranquility, yes, pasadi, calm, peace. All of these words work for it. So pasadi is the Pali word, but you really sense a tranquility, calm, peace, like ah. And when that's there, that is a supporting factor for the next one to arise, which is samadhi, exactly. Often translated as concentration, or really better known as collecting the mind, unification of the mind, mind being settled. Because, yeah, and you can just kind of see it in your own practice when the mind, or in your own experience, when the mind and heart are kind of in sense of calm, pasadi, tranquility, like, the mind can get settled and stable and collected much more easily. And that's the sixth factor, concentration, samadhi. And all of those, all of the factors together then give rise to equanimity, upekkha, equanimity. So in some ways, again, you can see these as a progression. It's fine to see it as a progression, as long as you also see it as all of these factors supporting each other. Equanimity, having equanimity, supporting all the other six factors. Samadhi supporting everything else, supporting sati, etc. So all of them, they all support each other. And you can also see there to be a progression also. They're both coexistent. So let's talk a little bit about equanimity. Yeah, and one more thing to say also, not only can you see equanimity as the end, the culmination, and supporting others, but you can also see it as a beginning, because when there is a sense of equanimity, you can support everything else flowing out of it. You know, when there's a sense of stability of mind, there can be more mindfulness, more curiosity, investigation, etc., etc. So equanimity. So the word equanimity itself, exploring that for a moment, the root is the word, the Latin word, equanimitas, which means having an even mind, or equus, which means even animus. So two parts to that world. There's equus and animus, which means even mind or soul. So often translated as the state of psychological stability and composure, which is undisturbed by that which may cause others to lose the balance of their mind. So a sense of psychological stability and composure. And I would say that the psychological stability, a lot of times we can use, as I've already pointed to, but this is a great time to make a connection, the psychological stability can come from a sense of kayagatasati, mindfulness of the body, to use kind of a physical sense of stability of the body to get resourced more for psychological stability. The two are connected. Kayagata. Kaya, K-A-Y-A. Kaya means body. Gata, G-A-T-A. Gata means gone to. Sati, S-A-T-I, mindfulness. So literally means mindfulness gone to the body. Mindfulness of the body. Isn't that lovely? I like that. Mindfulness gone to the body. Mindfulness. So, again, I'd like to offer a few synonyms of equanimity and let these wash over you. This is from Merriam-Webster. Calmness, collectedness, composedness, aplomb, equilibrium, serenity. So the concept of equanimity also is not, Buddhism obviously does not have hegemony over this concept. It's a universal concept. It's in lots of different schools of thought, lots of different religions. And the virtues and value of equanimity is really extolled and advocated by many ancient philosophies and major religions. It's in Hinduism, in yoga, in Stoicism, Judaism. And interesting, what I also found in Islam, looking at Wikipedia, is that the word Islam actually itself in Arabic is derived from aslama, which denotes peace. That comes from total surrender and acceptance. So a true Muslim would experientially behold that everything happening is meant to be and stems from the ultimate wisdom of God. So therefore, a Muslim can therefore be understood to mean that one is in the state of equanimity. Because there's this complete sense of ease with whatever is happening. So the word Muslim then could be understood as equivalent to being in the state of equanimity, which I thought was so interesting, quite lovely to think of this concept being in so many different traditions in different ways, relating it to in different ways. And I'll talk about how we relate to it, how Buddhism relates to it being a non-theistic religion. And it's kind of funny because in Wikipedia, the person who is quoted on Buddhism is our very own Gil. Isn't that fun? Okay, so I'll read Gil's quote from Wikipedia on equanimity. I'll tell you actually once, this is fun. Once I was teaching a retreat with Gil and I was giving the equanimity talk on the retreat, and when I think there had been previous times on the retreat where I had looked up a couple of other things in Buddhism on Wikipedia just to see what the general thing is, and I had seen Gil quoted a few times, so I kept saying, by the time I got to this, I kind of looked at him and said, guess who was quoted? I looked at Gil and he turns kind of red or like very sweet. Anyway, so here is the Gil quote. And he, by the way, he hasn't put any of these quotes. I think other people have put the quotes in for him, obviously. So equanimity is one of the most sublime emotions of Buddhist practice. It is the ground for wisdom and freedom and the protector of compassion and love. While some may think of equanimity as dry neutrality or cool aloofness, mature equanimity produces a radiance and warmth of being. The Buddha described a mind filled with equanimity as abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and ill will. And this is from one of the suttas, and it's beautiful. The mind filled with equanimity as abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. So, I'd like to turn our attention more now to the word upekkha, now that we've kind of like covered the background a little bit of equanimity and different cultures and relationships. Now, the word upekkha and the way Buddhism relates to the concept of equanimity and how important it is. The word itself, upekkha, means to see, to oversee, overview, as if you have a bird's eye perspective and you're not caught. So for me, simply the word upekkha, when I think of the translation in Pali, as this having the sense of a bird's eye view, to me that says it all, right? Because often when I'm caught, when I'm contracted in a very limited view of myself, an issue or something that's happening, there is no perspective. There is no perspective. But when there is the sense of bird's eye view perspective, overview, seeing from having this big, wide perspective, it completely changes my relationship. It gives more space. I can see the causes and conditions, all the various causes and conditions that have led to what's happening, and also gives a spaciousness in time and space and conditionality. So there are many different dimensions where spaciousness comes in. I can see sense of time. Oh, so many things have happened that have brought this, what is happening right now. And there would be a lot of many things that coming into being. And also sense of space, this is not the only thing that's happening, there's so much more. So it's kind of this richness of this perspective. It brings a sense of equanimity. It's a sense of ease that comes from seeing the bigger picture. For example, if there's someone, say, in our life who's angry and has said some hurtful words. If we just think of how hurt we are and how difficult the word is, the words have been, it's a different perspective compared to having a bigger perspective of, oh, this person has an angry nature. They just hurt everyone with their angry words. It's not just me. It's not just the situation that just happened. This is their nature. It's not personal. They do this with everyone. You know, you can see, of course you'll still have wisdom taking the right action, but it kind of eases that, for me, it eases that holding, like, oh yeah, I have more, bigger perspective, and I can hold it with more equanimity, this thing that has happened. There is another word that also means equanimity in Pali, which I like to bring in. And I think it's a really powerful word. And that is tatramajatata. Tatramajatata. I spell that for those who may want to write it down. Like, wow, how do you write this one? So tatra, T-A-T-R-A. Maja, M-A-J-J-H-A. And tata, well actually, but you'll have two T's, T-T-A-T-A. So this is a compound word made of three simple Pali words. So Tatra means there, and sometimes referred to all these things. All these things. So that's the Tatra. And then Majja means middle. You know, if you've heard Majjhima Nikaya, middle length discourses, Majja, middle. Tata means to stand or to pose. So these three words together mean to stand in the middle of all this. And I love that. For me, it comes with an image of, to stand in the middle of all this. And what I love is to stand, kind of like the sense of stability. And I kind of like my hands feel open, like my arms go to the side, my hands are open, like holding, like it's as if whole, you know, shower is coming down. Stand in the middle of all this. Wow. But standing in the middle of all this, right? Standing, not cowering. Standing in the middle of all this. Standing with stability. So, referring to the balance, remaining centered, remaining stable in the middle of whatever is happening. Whatever is happening. And this balance can come from the inner stability, the strong presence of the inner calm, the well-being, confidence, vitality, integrity, which can keep us upright as if a ballast from a ship. And it can also be supported by kayagatasati, mindfulness of the body, the sense of stability that can come. Again, this morning as we were doing this guided meditation about an hour ago, this sense of sitting like a mountain, relaxing, softening, sense of stability comes. Just from your posture, just from the way you're sitting, just the way you're holding yourself. That's why whenever I see people in meditation, sitting in meditation, like crossing their arms, crossing their legs, it's not a meditation posture that gives rise to a sense of stability. And I noticed this actually myself years and years ago. Like crossing your legs when you're sitting cross-legged on the floor is different than when you're sitting on a chair and you're kind of crossing your legs and crossing your arms. I noticed this years ago when I was a beginner practitioner and just kind of not knowing what I was doing, but exploring, being really mindful. And then I remembered if I sat with my legs crossed, my mind wouldn't stabilize. My mind would still be kind of like not stable enough, but then kind of, and after a while I would notice when my mind would get settled, I wanted to uncross my legs. My body would kind of straighten itself out into a state of integrity. It just kind of felt icky to have my legs or feet crossed, like we would be feet crossed or my arms crossed. It just kind of like didn't feel right. A stable mind needed a body that resembled it, that resembled a sense of integrity. So vice versa, you can take advantage of that to make sure whenever you are sitting, whether on the floor or in a chair, that you have a sense of integrity. The body is balanced so that could be used as a springboard for the mind to have stability and balance. I think on that one, the Zen folks have it right, with a sense of like stability of the body and the form being important, but not too strict. So it's also said that equanimity is a protection from the eight worldly winds. I love this teaching in Buddhism on the eight worldly winds. the worldly winds being praise and blame, fame and disrepute, gain and loss, also known as success and failure, and pleasure and pain. So none of us are immune from the 8 worldly winds. I'll repeat them one more time. Praise and blame. You will be praised. You will be blamed. It's inevitable. It will happen. If you're being praised, it's okay. Great. Just wait for the blame. If you're being blamed, great. Wait for the praise. They will come, they will go. Part of the 8 worldly winds. Fame and disrepute, they'll come and go. Part of the 8 worldly winds. Success and failure, or gain and loss, they will come and go. We'll taste success, we'll taste failure. And pleasure and pain, of course. That's the easiest one to know that, yes, pleasure comes, pain comes. 8 worldly winds. So becoming attached or excessively elated with success, praise, and fame, and or pleasure, all the goodies, can be a setup for suffering when the winds of life change direction. Not to say not to enjoy them. Of course, enjoy them. Why not? But becoming excessively elated or attached or identified, like that's who I am, it's a setup for a lot of suffering. Rather to see them as winds that blow for everyone. Different times, different circumstances. The circumstances that could be completely out of your control. You have control on some causes and conditions, but not on every single thing. We just don't. That's the nature of being human. So these winds will blow, the same way that you don't have control over the winds, the direction they blow. You just don't. Similarly, identifying too much with failure, one can feel incompetent or inadequate, so that's not healthy either, or supportive. Or reacting to pain, one can become discouraged. Or identifying with pain too much. So if we can understand that or feel that our sense of inner well-being is independent of the 8 worldly winds, we are more likely to remain in an even keel in their midst. So, developing equanimity, this sense of stability that again we'll explore more throughout the day, but I'm front-loading some concepts right now until before we get into exploration, more explorations on our own. So a sense of equanimity, the sense of stability can support with not identifying with the winds that come and go, enjoying them, and also when there is pain, letting your heart to break open with compassion for yourself and others. But still, with a sense of stability, because the stability, the equanimity, actually, in another place that equanimity, by the way, shows up is in the Brahma Viharas, in the 4 heavenly abodes, or the 4 practices of the heart. Metta, loving kindness, being the first one, compassion, karuna, the second one. The third one being mudita, vicarious joy. And the fourth one being upekkha, equanimity. And you would think, oh, equanimity is related to the practices of the heart, to metta and other ones. How could that be? Well, you need a sense of stability. You need a sense of stability for loving kindness in order for it not to become attached to love, like, oh, I love you, therefore you love me back, and I love you, you know, so that it can become an open-hearted love. You need equanimity so that compassion doesn't become sympathetic despair, doesn't fall into the pain, but has a sense of stability to hold the pain with care, with compassion, with love. You need equanimity in order for mudita, which is vicarious joy, to become neither exuberance nor pride. Like, oh, see how my kid did. Oh, this is, or also for it not to fall into envy, right? When you're happy for somebody else's happiness. So you need a sense of equanimity, stability of mind for all of these practices. And also another thing that this teaches us, points to, this grouping is equanimity is not aloof. Equanimity is not cool. Oh, you there. Oh, yeah, I'm just here totally balanced. And no, equanimity has a sense of warmth, care, heart in it. Equanimity is different from aloofness. In fact, the near enemy, so each of these Brahma Viharas practices, the four practices I mentioned, the classical language, they have a near enemy and a far enemy. Or near enemy, kind of a flowery language. What it really is it's something that could be easily mistaken for the real thing. So equanimity, it's near enemy, something that could easily be confused with it is aloofness. Aloofness, or other words for it, are kind of the sense of not caring, like kind of coolness, like coolness, aloofness. Indifference, that's another word, thank you, I was looking for that. Indifference, kind of not caring one way or the other. So indifference, aloofness and coolness are not equanimity. They are not equanimity. And we'll explore more today later, just for us experientially to feel the difference. But it's really important. Equanimity is not any of those. Those are the near enemies. So when it's like, I don't care, I'm aloof, I'm indifferent, it doesn't have that sense of care, warmth, doesn't have the wisdom, doesn't have the compassion, doesn't have the love in it. Equanimity is balanced, but also with an open heart, stable. So another way to think of equanimity is also using its far enemy. So the far enemy of equanimity is actually two things, which make sense. One is either falling in or pushing away. So either getting attached to something, getting completely attached, or the opposite of it is pushing something away. Okay, because equanimity is the sense of stability, standing in the middle of all this, and a sense of neither attaching nor pushing away. So earlier this morning, for example, when Daryl, you were talking about this, like this, there's not this, that irritation is kind of like, what I construed you to say is like when there was irritation, there was this minor pushing away. And irritation on its own is fine as long as the mind is stable with it. But when there is that subtle pushing away, like, oh, I don't want that. Oh, I don't want that. Oh, I want that. And the mind continuously pushing something away and wanting something different, that's lack of equanimity. Equanimity is when the mind is stable with what is. So there could be something that's unpleasant, but the mind is not pushing it away. Or something that's pleasant, it's enjoyed, but the mind is not kind of like, attaching to it, like wanted, like grasping its wrist around it. So in a way, equanimity could be likened to holding something with an open hand, not grasping it like this, and neither like throwing it away, trying to get it away from you. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Kind of like with a sense of ease. So there's more I can say, but I'm going to pause now, and I'll talk about this more. I want to pause and see if there are any questions right now about so much I've thrown your way in terms of concepts. What equanimity is, it isn't. Please.
Just a quick clarification on the last thing. So the near enemy would be this aloofness, and the far enemy would be a tipping towards aversion or attachment.
Yes, exactly. Exactly would be attachment or aversion are the far enemies, exactly. Are things that are the opposite to.
Mm-hmm. And then equanimity has the sense of warm-heartedness, kind of openness, which is different than compassion or metta.
Yeah, it's very subtle. It's very, very subtle. So let me clarify that a little bit. So the kind of the warmth of equanimity is very subtle, is not as pronounced as metta or compassion, but it's like the baseline. The way I think of it is, you know, there's a baseline radiation in the universe. It's just baseline, right? It's just a baseline radiation. It's kind of like that baseline warmth, but it's there. It's not zero. It's not cool. It's a little warm. Does that make sense a little bit? I'll tell you how this became clear for me in my own practice. So I kind of thought as equanimity as being so stable, like a rock, you know, like a mountain, and like there's more stability than, and for me that there wasn't much sense of warmth. And years ago, I did a month of practice on the four Brahma Viharas. So I went through practicing, in fact, it was Brahma Vihara Jhanas because they're concentration practices. So practice metta diligently, and then I moved to compassion, karuna, practice that diligently for another week, and then went to mudita for another week, and then the last week was the practice of upekkha. And upekkha, by the way, there's a specific practice that I will share with you later today, the phrases you will say, some phrases would be things are as they are. May I accept the comings and goings of things just as they are, etc., etc. There's some phrases you can say, or beings are heir to their own actions. My good wishes for their happiness or unhappiness does not depend on my good wishes for them, but their actions, etc. So there are many different phrases that I will share with you for the formal practice of equanimity. So as I was practicing this, you know, my previous notion was that it's pretty stable, it's pretty cool. I thought it was pretty. But as I was really getting into it, I think for the very first time for a whole week, it's like, wait, there is some care. There is some. It's again, it's not as bright as compassion and loving kindness practices, but it's, there's just, there, and then it became clear to me why it's grouped with the Brahma Viharas, why it's there. So it's kind of like a stability that has some care to it. Does that make sense? Does that clarify it a little more? It's subtle, but it's, you have to feel it for yourself. Could you like to take a mic or
I guess where I have the difficulty is with indifference and equanimity, because I mean, indifference has a feeling of a little bit of pushing away.
Yes.
But it still has for me, I guess I've seen equanimity like you saw it before you felt that there was a level of care. I don't see that coming up in equanimity. I see it more as a balanced position where you're neither tilted one way or the other way, and that you just see things really clearly without any emotional component. So okay. It's hard for me to see the caring quality.
Yeah,
equanimity.
Yeah. Right. Great. So everything that you said, yes, with the sense of balance, with the sense of wisdom, with the sense of clarity. And here's the part that maybe is not seen. You need to care to keep your heart open and stable and listen. That's the care. Otherwise, you would turn away. Right? That's the care. It's already there. But it's not seen. You need to care to stay open, stay engaged.
I can more relate to keeping the heart open than using the word caring. Because the heart should be open all the time, right?
Well, should. That's another word to look for.
No, I understand, but that's... Yeah,
right,
you know.
Right.
So an open heart has more... I can relate to that better than the word caring.
If the word open heart works for you, great. Because we each have personal ways we relate to different lexical items in the English language. Mm-hmm. And for me, the sense of care is that opening of the heart. I care, that's why I'm here teaching, mm-hmm. right? It's not out of indifference, it's that openness of the heart is a sense of care for me. So see what works for you, and mm-hmm. also see it in your practice, and also let yourself be surprised. Let yourself, and as I say, I was completely blown away when I saw that in my own practice, because I had assumed, oh yeah, it's really stable, it's really But I think my image of it was maybe veering a little more into indifference. Mm-hmm. I can admit it now. Mm-hmm. Because I could clearly see it, but mm-hmm. just so let yourself be open and surprised. And for now, work with whatever works for you.
Yeah. As you're talking,
yeah.
I think for what came, let's see if I can remember, what came is, in the caring, is the dissolution of boundaries between that person and me.
Yeah.
So the caring would be, you know, the kind of...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that again, you know, I understand each person has their own history. What?
Yeah,
feels, yeah,
right, right.
The caring would be not to have that indifference. Well, because
right.
I had something with a friend recently.
Right.
I had something with a friend recently that really brought that up.
Yeah, yeah.
And... you know, I think she said something about you sound like you don't care, you know, that you're really indifferent. And there was a part of me that really was. I didn't care.
Right.
You know, either we're going to be friends
right.
or not friends. I didn't have right. an investment.
Right.
But I guess maybe, you know, something like that, maybe just seeing the boundaries between the two of us might have made it a little different.
Yeah, I'm so appreciating, Marcia, that you're exploring, your heart and mind are really now exploring the boundaries, the dissolution of boundaries, and in some ways, these practices do work in dissolving the boundaries, but still with wisdom and care. So thank you. I appreciate
you
doing this exploration in real time.
I appreciate your exploration. Without you, it wouldn't go very far. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. So how about we take a break, long-awaited break, and let's make it a 20-minute. And if you like to also take some time to walk outside, it's 10:57. Let's be back by 11:20 and just make it spacious and walk and take care of yourself. Oh, thank you for reminding me. I will have handouts. And I'll also make a handout for last time. I forgot to give it to you. It's on the website, but I will... Yeah. By the way, all the handouts are on the website, but for today, I will print it out and give it to you.